And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Dork Fest, where we've had a rare event at MIT. This is a dead time in the NBA season, and yet there was huge breaking news this morning with the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets, the Nets of Brooklyn, and head coach Kenny Atkinson, I believe in his fifth year with the Nets, mutually agreeing to part ways. That's one of my favorites, mutually agreeing. And Kevin Arnovitz and I, since we're in Boston together, mutually agreed to do a podcast about it. Kevin, how are you?
It's like every romantic relationship. There's no such thing as mutual agreement to break up.
Someone always has to win or lose.
Right.
Kenny lost.
Kenny lost, although he'll get paid.
You will get paid. So one of the reasons you're perfect for this, A, you know Kenny and the Hawks coaching tree very well. B, you are, I think, currently working on your annual who are the next head coaches from the assistant ranks and sort of what is the template of the head coaching job in the NBA in 2020. And as we were talking before, I was actually out with someone from a team last night after the Celtics game charting how many head coaching openings there's going to be this summer. And there could be anywhere from 7 to 13.
Yes.
There is going to be a lot depending on what happens in the playoffs.
This seems to happen like every few years. You have these placid periods where it's like, God, there just weren't that many openings. Teams sort of situated from a big year, they're giving guys a chance. And, but this year's one of those like every third year tsunami of coaching changes.
And there is, so I think this is not a shocking event.
No.
Right? This is one of those things that there are always stories like this where people inside the league know, but it's not really reportable because it hasn't happened yet. Things could change. You don't get it publicly reportable in a way. But like this, the timing though is very, very strange coming off a couple of very nice wins. I mean, I literally watched them destroy the Spurs last night by a million points. And it's March 7th. There's 20 games left in the season. The Nets are going to make the playoffs. It's just the timing is weird. And that strikes you hard at first, like this is something must be fishy here. And we'll get into what is fishy, where the fish are, why they smell. But I do think there is a universe in which this is good for Kenny because he's out early. He now becomes the belle of the ball, the first big name, and he gets to watch all the jobs open and sort of get to feel it out. That said, before we talk about the machinations going on a human level, I feel for him. Because this is year five. He has, I think, three young boys who are they've made Brooklyn their life.
Yeah, people set down roots. It's a real thing.
But his kids have played sports there. They're in the right schools that he wanted. Everyone's like, every time I see Kenny, he's just so, that part of his life is so happy. And now that's gone. That has to change.
He was in a great neighborhood. He grew up on Long Island. And yeah, I mean, and that's rough. And it's, look, it's a rejection of some kind. I mean, I think that it's impossible not to interpret it. In terms of the timing, yes and no, right? It's a surprise. They've come off a couple good wins, but how does a coach when the sword of Damocles is just hanging over them? I mean, as you said, it's the worst kept secret in basketball.
Well, there are worse kept ones that we probably shouldn't mention yet, but there are worse kept ones.
So I do think there's a certain point where, if a coach becomes what is regarded as a lame duck for whatever reason, good or bad, what are we doing here? Right? Everyone knows.
This is why the idea that Fizdale was going to stay after the Knicks did the stupidest press conference in the history of press conferences was like ludicrous. Like as soon as that press conference happened, it was over. The players knew it was over. Fizdale knew it was over. And it was just a matter of like, how long are you going to drag this out?
Yeah.
So, let's get into why this happened. Anthony Puccio and Stefan Bondi have both tweeted versions of, the players were not happy. Some players were not happy. It's an interesting situation because he hasn't gotten to coach the team. The team that they all envisioned is gone. Kyrie Irving's hurt again. Kevin Durant's been out the whole season. Next year is the year. For some reason, the Nets players and a variable that I think will not get talked about enough, new ownership, have determined that going into next year, which is the most important year in the history of the Nets franchise since when? I don't know. Maybe the Paul Pierce Garnett year, but like that was a big year. They traded a lot for that. But like next year, this is a mega year for them. And they've determined that Kenny's not the right coach for that team without seeing him get to coach the team. And that's, I think, why this struck a lot of people, a raw nerve with a lot of people, right?
Right. I mean, you want a guy to get a chance. I mean, the way I'm sort of framing it in my own head is Kenny Atkinson was the perfect coach for what they wanted to do at the time. Now they've changed what they wanted to do. And I'm sort of with Bondi on this, right? Like if the core of superstars wanted Kenny Atkinson to be the coach, he probably would have stayed. I do wonder, I mean, look, this is only semi-reported, but I do feel like there was a sort of an atmosphere of, oh, when the veterans came in, you have a cute little culture here. Isn't this quaint? You've overachieved, okay? And I do think it also speaks to just the power of the star. And I wrote this a couple years ago. Coaches are expendable in a way players aren't. And I think that's becoming more and more true. We talk about the self-determination of these stars. And I think we mostly frame it as a good thing. These are the guys who are driving the talent of the league, and for them to have, you know, more than a modicum of power, you know, it's justified. However, what are the unintended consequences of a movement? And one of the unintended consequences is coaches are expendable. And with the rare exception, I mean, we could probably count on one hand the coaches who probably are not vulnerable to the whims of their superstars. Greg Popovich, he doesn't really have any superstars. Eric Spoelstra, Rick Carlisle. I don't know. Yeah, maybe Doc.
The list. Well, yeah, maybe Doc. Yeah.
Maybe, right? Like,
because Doc is a superstar in his own right.
Absolutely. But I mean, we have to think about it, right? Because Kawhi, and that's a good relationship right now. So it's not even an issue.
They're good, by the way.
Oh my god,
they're good.
You know, it's just I've kind of just bought in the last 10 days. For a while, I was like, not to get changed. I was like, hey, I think they're really good. I'd like to see it, and now we've seen it. Yeah. But there are so few of these guys out there who you can honestly say, hey. If there was discontent among the key contributors in the locker room, this guy would be fine.
I want to be careful because it's inevitable that this is going to be laid at the feet of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And I'm not sure how fair that is. Like, I agree with what Bondi tweeted, and I agree with what you said. If they proactively said, he's our coach, he's the coach. So I think it's safe to conclude that they did not proactively say, he's the guy. That's different than saying, he's not the guy, get rid of him. I don't know if they said that. I have no reporting that says they said that. I think the reporting that players, there were unhappy players, is 100% true. I don't know that it was them at the top of the unhappy player list. I will say this. I think there's been some displeasure with some of the rotation decisions that have happened there this year, but like, it's a hard job. They got a lot of ball handlers. Like, Caris LeVert was coming off the bench for a while. I don't think Caris was unhappy about that. Caris is fine.
And now he's scoring 41 a night.
Yeah. I don't think that was a problem, but like, it's just a lot of juggling. And I'm confident of this. And again, I want to be careful. I think the DeAndre Jordan coming off the bench thing was going to be a simmering issue for a long time. And not necessarily because DeAndre was out there like, I deserve to start this and that. I don't think, like, DeAndre is like, I've been critical of him as a player. He's a popular teammate. He's a get-along guy. Like, I don't think he would do that. I don't think he would I think maybe he wasn't thrilled with coming off the bench, but I don't think he's going to take that out and go upstairs and be mad about it. But I do think there was a sense of these three guys came. They did come to play together, Durant, Kyrie, and DJ. And DJ coming off the bench sort of limits how much they get to play together. And I don't think that's quite what was envisioned by anybody. And even if none of the three principals are like out and out mad about it and out agitating about it, I think it's just one of those things that everyone feels is like, it's like the media is going to keep asking questions about it, right? Like, it's just going to be a topic that keeps coming up. So I think that was when people talk about rotation decisions, I think that one was just sort of a back burner, like, is this going to be tense for a while?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think...
By the way, Jared Allen's better than DeAndre Jordan.
Well, yeah.
Jared Allen deserves to start over DeAndre Jordan. It was the right move.
I think discord can take a couple of different forms, and I agree with you. Like, there's a difference between get this guy out of here and a non-endorsement, the non-denial, right? Like the non-endorsement, is that de facto... get this guy out of here.
It's not. Right. I don't
they're
think
gradations.
That's fair.
That's what I'm saying.
But
right?
I do think this. Kevin Durant specifically, there are 8 guys in the league who are, whatever the number is, right? We know who they are. Kyrie Irving's not one of them. Who are so good that they single-handedly drive winning. Single-handedly, you have them on your team, you are in a position to compete for a championship. Those 8 guys, if they go to the owner and say, that's my coach, they are listened to.
Right.
Because they are the most important people in the NBA.
Yeah, and there are precedents for that, and clearly that didn't happen. And again, I'm with you. I don't want to – I don't mind suggesting. I don't want to firmly state. But I do – look, I do believe in the spirit of this that, hey, if there was a movement to keep Kenny – among the locker room, it would have happened, right? And I, again, there's a difference between, however, you're right, between non-endorsement and an outright, you know, rebellion. And I also agree with you on DeAndre in the sense that even through the tumultuousness of the Clippers, he was always, I think, a guy who, in a certain sense, was, he was, I think largely because he was a benevolent follower.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he wasn't going to sow discord. He might have been unhappy here and happy there, but I mean, he doesn't have a precedent. I mean, in a world where everybody was unhappy, he was at least, I think, measured and controlled about whatever unhappiness he had.
And again, I just want to be clear. Like, I just think it was one of 10 issues
right.
that were just simmering. When people vaguely say, oh, there was unhappiness about X, Y, and Z, I think it was just simmering vaguely among with 10 other things. And again, there's huge pressure on the Nets. Huge. New owner really wants to win. Two stars came. Next year, the team is fully formed, and they've determined that for so this is what's interesting to me is Kenny is now the player development guy.
Right.
Kenny is the guy I want to. If you have a young, and you're going to hear it when the jobs open up. Oh, that's a young team. Kenny'd be perfect for that team. Can he take a team the next step? Well, we have questions about whether he has the gravitas and the X's and O's acumen and the playoff adjustment acumen and all that stuff you need to go from the coach that does the raising of the child to the coach that, you know, gets the kid through college and all that. And the truth is we don't know.
Right.
You don't know. And it's unfair to brand him as that and only that when he hasn't gotten a chance to be the other thing. And the name you brought up to me that's always interesting in these discussions is Eric Spoelstra. Because there was a moment when LeBron got there, it's well documented, where they could have moved on from him. He was in his third or fourth year as the Heat's head coach. And Pat Riley said, no, he's good. He's going to learn. I believe in him. He's going to be the coach that you guys need to get you over the hump. And it's the best decision they made as an organization, or one of the best decision is signing LeBron James. But one of the best is keeping Eric Spoelstra because, and I've said this a million times, you think your coach is a B and you want an A? You don't necessarily get an A. And if the B can become an A, then you have a guy for a long time. And we all sit here and say, look at the Heat. Congratulations, Carlisle, the stability in Dallas. It's so great. Maybe Kenny Atkinson's a B forever. I don't know. But if he's not, and you just ask somebody who could be an A, you are at risk now of becoming the franchise that's on its 10th coach in 11 seasons.
Well, and Carlisle's an interesting case because he's run out in Detroit and Indiana. Let's do a counterfactual, right? And he's, by the way, he's grown as a coach, right? But do we know that the Pistons or the Pacers might not have been the Heat where, you know, you stay with Rick, you could have become the Indiana Pacers where, yeah, you stick with this guy through up and down, through various storms, and, oh, by the way, over time, he evolves in the evolution of any coach. There's a moment when they're new and untested, and then there's a moment where they're just seasoned and veteran. Your point is good, well taken, and it reminds me kind of, there's this sort of mythology in Hollywood where somebody who's on the assistant desk, you know, can never advance in a certain agency or production company because he'll always be seen as the assistant and that you have to go outside an organization to at least be perceived as something more than that. And the NBA coaching ranks are like that. We don't know. I mean, Kenny Atkinson might be a great coach for a veteran team. You know what? He treats people like grown-ass men. I mean, we don't know, but you're right. He's the guy who worked on the floor with guys. He was the guy when you were at the Garden under Mike D'Antoni. He was the floor guy. And I do wonder if there is an enduring perception about certain guys that they are this. And hey, again, as I said it up top, what happened? The Nets thought Kenny Atkinson was perfect for what they wanted to do, and then they wanted to do something else.
And Kenny's a good coach, and he's going to get hired fast.
Yes.
And he's probably going to have his pick of at least a few options. And also, this may turn out to be the best move for the Nets. They may be right. They may be – and there were – the Nets over the last two seasons, as the expectations increased, did have – like particularly last season, there was a stretch of like bad end game situations, just end game situations gone totally awry. I don't think that's always the coach's fault. Like, the players have to execute the play, but like, that happens enough times. I think it's fair for a team to start asking questions. Like, is this guy up to the adjustments, up to the in the moment X's and O's and all of that? I think those are fair questions, and they were asked last year and they were continued to ask this year, but, coaches grow, coaches improve, and the Nets had a really good coach. And this is a risky decision because, you know, maybe they have a coach in the bag. You know, we can talk about what kind of coaches you think would be good for this roster. It is a roster that expects to compete for a championship next year, so they're not going to hire an untested head coach. But, you know, this is – unless he completely lost the locker room, which I guarantee you there are players who are upset about this. I guarantee you there are players who are heartbroken about it, even if there are other players who are not. I think this it's every decision is a risk, but like firing a good coach is always a risk. And that's what they did. They mutually agreed, to part ways with a good coach.
No, and to your point, right? They got rid of however you want to appraise him, B, A minus, B plus, B minus. There is no guarantee the next coach. Everyone thinks they're going to get the Steve Kerr. Everyone thinks they're going to get the Phil Jackson, the guy who elevates you to the next step. We don't know.
So what kind of coach – how good do you think they're going to be next year?
I have no idea. I'm not even going to speculate. I mean, how many games is Kyrie Irving going to play? Does it matter? Is he actually an additive to a championship team at this point? Who's still going to be left? Who are they going to surround them with? I have no – by the way, and who's going to coach them? We still don't know how many wins or losses a coach adds to. I mean – you know, we always talk about this with Hollinger back in the day. Like, we have a metric for everything. And you know what the Bermuda Triangle of analytics is? Coaching analytics. We don't know if this is worth – is a guy worth 0.8 wins? Is he worth 8 wins? We don't – is it dependent on other variables? Can you look at it in a vacuum? And if it is dependent on other variables, what other variables? Like, we have no idea what coaches are worth.
Sometimes the easy narratives are right. Like
– Occam's razor.
Like, we get – the media gets a lot of criticism, I think, for, you know, as soon as a team gets something of a facelift, you start to worry about a coach, right? Or as soon as player X walks in the door, you start to worry about the incumbent coach. I think the moment they pivoted last summer, and some people within that organization had trepidation about it, I think this maybe didn't become inevitable. Like Woj tweeted today that this had become inevitable, but by now. And I think inevitable is a strong word. Woj knows his information, obviously, back and forth. I think that's correct. I think clearly they made a decision that this was going to happen. But I just think last summer's transactions, I think you have to do them if you're the Nets. If Kevin Durant says, I want to go to your team, this is before his Achilles tear, a guy on pace to be one of the 10 greatest basketball players of all time at age 29 or 30. Even with the Achilles tear, you have to say yes. And I just think that the kind of team they had did a total 180, and that's hard. That's hard for an incumbent coach who saw the team when they had no draft picks and were really bad.
Yeah, and again, I want to say this with a disclaimer that we don't know the level of discontent, to what extent the stars precipitated, to the level of precipitation. But I will say this. It also is further proof, and I've changed on this, of the idea that, oh, our strong culture can absorb anybody, including a top 5, top 10, top 15 player. No. The players set the culture at that level. You know, that was the thing in Boston. Oh, we can absorb anybody. We can absorb Kyrie. No. You get subsumed. And I've come around because I'm a culture guy and I praise it. Certain teams can just absorb anyone. You know, even the Golden State to a certain extent with Durant, their culture didn't turn bad per se, but it was different. He wasn't absorbed. He put his own imprint on it.
And we're going to see versions of this in different parts of the league. Like, I think Atlanta will eventually hit a point where they're not a cute young team with all these kids anymore. They want to win. Taylor Jenkins has been incredible in Memphis this year. I love watching them. I think he's incredible. It's just easier when there are no expectations. And I don't know. Memphis is the kind of market where Kevin Durant and those kind of level of stars are not going there. So maybe that's just a nice organic situation that can grow for a long time. But expectations, and I don't know Josiah. I've never talked to Josiah, but I have a hard time believing that new ownership and just this next year is a huge. I wonder if we went back, if next year is the most important year in the history of the Nets organization since they moved from the ABA. I mean, I guess the Jason Kidd finals years, but those felt at the time like found money. Like, oh, this is fun. Like, we nailed this trade. This is fun. Like, we're the Swamp Dragons and then we're making the finals. Next year, you better freaking win. And that's to everybody. That's to the players. That's to the ownership. That's to the front office. That's to the new coach. Like, you better win. You better win next year because you just made a big, big change. You made several big, big changes with an eye on we're a championship team. You better not win the championship, but you better be damn good next year.
It's not just the basketball ops. You have made capital investments in that franchise. That building, just the facilities. I mean, you have invested.
And by the way, the ratings still stink and yes. The attendance is still, I don't know what it is, but it's not a right. lively place to watch a basketball game.
Right. And that is part of this. It's not just, oh, you made these acquisitions. You have put an incredible, huge expenditures into this franchise on every level, infrastructurally. I mean, how marketing, like everything.
The most gorgeous practice facility in
exactly.
the NBA, maybe.
That costs money to build in one of the five boroughs.
Yes.
And so I think that's also part of this.
They become, you know, the playoffs are everything in the NBA, right? Like I remember last year thinking about all these impending free agents, you know, a very smart person told me in like January, December, we're gossiping about what's Kawhi going to do? What this guy going to do is the playoffs. Yep. The playoffs are going to, like, you just have to wait to see how the playoffs play out. And so lots of things are going to happen in the playoffs. Teams are going to get upset, lose earlier than expected, advance further than expected. But Brooklyn is going to enter next season as one of the two or three most interesting teams in the NBA because all this, it's time now. Like, when Kevin comes back, it's time. It's time to win. And again, playoffs, we'll see what happens with Milwaukee. But if Giannis is staying there, that team's not going anywhere. Toronto, we'll see.
Boston is the thing, and yeah. He's
going
to be there.
Boston's not going anywhere. Miami's not going anywhere. Philly could go lots of different places. I don't know, but it's not like the top of the East is a cakewalk. The bottom of the East, have we all dispensed with the idea that the conferences are equal now? Because the top six in the East is nice.
Yeah.
7-15 is poopy.
Yeah.
And like the West is,
although presumably Boston or Brooklyn rather will be. Six will turn to seven, at least theoretically, or five will turn to six, depending on where you have Indiana next year.
Yeah, but these other teams, I don't have a huge amount of hope for these other teams toward the bottom of these. Cleveland, Atlanta will get better. I think Atlanta should set an organizational goal next year of we can get the eighth seed.
I guess. I mean, here's the problem with Atlanta. They had five good weeks of basketball in March, and then all of a sudden, the expectations change, whereas I feel like, wait, you actually are going to lose three vets. I mean, say what you want to about Dwayne Dedman. That guy helped them win some basketball games. Veterans, league average replacement veterans. You know, like, Torian Prince. Not a world beater, not an all-star.
Part of the Nets' shakiness this year is that Torian Prince has not been good.
No.
And it has been a disappointing. And they started Wilson Chandler last night. I was at the Celtics game, so I'm not entirely sure why that change was made. But they brought Torian Prince off the bench, which was interesting.
But wherever the impatience in Atlanta is emanating from, it frustrates me. They had how many players over the age of 23 did they have?
Where do you
in
think
the
it's emanating from? There's only one possible explanation: ownership.
Oh,
that's
sure.
it.
It's always and of course it's ownership. And you know they bring in, and this is what frustrates me about Atlanta to the extent that there's discontent is like that was the whole thing. We brought the guy in who understands the process. And by the way, you know what the funny thing about the process is? They went from 19 to 10. The second year is always harder. You know why? They got rid of veterans and replaced them. There are very few rookies who affect winning, as we know, as good as they are.
Well, I think one of the underplayed things about Memphis falling back a little bit, to your point about this, and now they're still four games up or three games up on the Kings in the loss column, four on the Blazers, so they haven't fallen back that much. But that Justice Winslow trade, Iguodala was the big name, right? Iguodala wasn't playing for them. Also in that trade were two sturdy rotation players, Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill. Sturdy, not great, but sturdy. Guys
Crowder
who
gives
go,
you a lot.
Go out, yeah, go out. They're going to go out and do their jobs. And in return, they got 0 minutes of productive NBA play. And all of a sudden, you're elevating deeper bench guys into more prominent roles. And I think in the moment of trades like that, I'm not saying Memphis did. I did personally. I think you underestimate the impact that has on your present day team to just lose 35 competent veteran minutes and replace it with zero.
Well, no, that was the point about Atlanta. I mean, Dwayne Dedman.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
Exactly. Dedman was a guy and he's back there now, but. You know, and so I was frustrated by the expectations for the Hawks because I thought they were completely unfair.
Yeah, they were in my lowest tier in my power rankings, and I wrote, like, I don't understand why people think this team's making the playoffs.
Because they played 4 good weeks of basketball.
Because they're babies. They're young. They're kids. They're kids in the NBA, and they used all of their cap space on guys who weren't going to help their team, like Chandler Parsons and, like, you know, those kind of players. But anyway, next year in the West, I wrote this in my column on Friday. Again, things will change, but as things stand right now, I think all 15 teams in the West will be able to look their season ticket holders in the eye, honestly, and say, we think we can make the playoffs this year. Now, we'll see. There are some teams who could pivot very easily into the bottom, and maybe that is a year to pivot to the bottom because no one else is there. You go right to the bottom. But I think all 15 teams, I'm not saying all of them will be realistic, but it's not crazy for Robert Sarver to go to his fans and say, hey, we're a rising team. We can make the playoffs this year. It's not crazy for Gerson Rosas to go to his season ticket holders and say, we got Carl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell. We're chasing the eighth seed. Golden State's back. You know, again, there are some wild cards. It's not crazy for Vivek Ranadive to say, we almost made
saying, yeah. Right? Like, the funny thing is the only team you say there'll be some, like, maybe pivot teams, I can only think of one.
OKC?
San Antonio.
Those are the two.
Right? OKC, yeah. If you know, they unload Chris, but I got to tell you something. As long as Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Schroeder are the guard rotation there, now obviously there are all these other variables. I mean, I see them playing a competent brand of basketball. Certainly 41-41, which gets you the 8th seed.
They are currently 6th in the West, 2 games out of Houston and Utah.
What's their winning percentage right now?
62.
Jeez.
39-24. So let's wrap by saying, tell us what we should know about your coach's piece, a ballpark when it's coming out, and what's sort of like what's been interesting to you in reporting it out and thinking about it. It's a very popular annual item, so I'm excited to read it.
It's funny. It started as I just thought there were all these assistants who were interesting and talking about prospects. And actually, the stuff I find most interesting now is the top of the piece. You know, everyone always focuses on the names and the gossip, and it's more like, what is the job? And this year, what we're doing is we're creating a taxonomy of different kinds of vacancies. Not all vacancies are the same, right? You can't just say, here are the 15 best coaching prospects, and by the way, all 15 are applicable for all 8, 9, 10 vacancies, right? I mean, the vacancy in Brooklyn is obviously going to be far different than the vacancy in, you know, pick another, you know, one of these gossipy things. I mean, what if, you know, if Cleveland opens it up, although I think, you know, there's some confidence in JB, but who knows, right? Like Chicago opens it up if for whatever reason, right? Like those are different jobs. Even these sort of young, like if Chicago opened it up, it would be more like the Phoenix 2019 opening where they went with Monty, which is, hey, we need someone to come in here and take control of the locker room and earn some respect versus the Taylor Jenkins 2019. I mean, both Memphis and Chicago were theoretically rebuilding and with limited expectations, but it was a decidedly different organizational ethic. And so to me, what's always interesting about the carousel is every single vacancy is different in mission. And also I always find that if you want to understand an organization's how they define their mission, who did they hire? Like, the Taylor Jenkins hire told you exactly what Memphis was. We are a technocratic organization now. All that palace intrigue, remember that piece I did about, like, the reality show drama that was the Memphis Grizzlies, you know, 5-6 years ago? Like, we are now a technocratic organization that is going to do this deliberately, right? Like, Atlanta, what frustrates me about Atlanta is the Lloyd Pierce 2018 hire is long runway. Really long runway. Philadelphia size, Hinkie-ish runway. Well, not so much. And, you know, and I always think that the hire tells you so much about, you know, the elevator pitch of a franchise. This is who we are.
And so that's what we're going to see in this piece is sort of like what types of jobs are out there and who might fit those jobs. Do we have a ballpark when it's coming out? Now you got some news to peg it to.
Yeah, like I think probably late. We always do it like during those dog days when we're all sitting around. We all know the playoff field except for like the eighth seed, and there's some jockeying for 4, 5, 2, 3. And I always think it's a fun time to sort of take inventory of some stuff. I would expect maybe the last week in March.
Okay, so that's about 3 weeks from now. Be on the lookout for that. Sorry to drag you on for the second time of the week, but you're here. We're both here
in
Boston.
This is great.
We're both, and I love talking coaching with you.
Yeah,
so
it's so fun.
So again, it's one of the black boxes of the NBA. You know, it's not a total black box. Like there are definitely knowable things and knowable decisions you can evaluate and things you agree and disagree on. But it's a big moment for the Brooklyn Nets, and the Nets have not had a lot of big moments in Brooklyn. So I am very interested to see how this turns out. This is a very interesting move, even if it was sort of burbling around. But anyway, Kevin Arnovitz, always a pleasure to see you, and we look forward to the piece.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.